This July, we celebrate the birth of our nation and remember the heroes who fought for our freedoms. But did you know there are Americans today who don't have the freedom of life and liberty? Every day, unborn babies' very lives are under attack. But because of preborn, we can rescue them.
I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
Ultrasounds save lives. And when you save a life at a preborn network clinic, you often save a soul, as over 85,000 women have come to know Christ. To learn more about preborn's life-saving work, call #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Appreciate you joining me on this wonderful Thursday. I say it's wonderful because any day above ground is a good day, right? I mean, come on. Amen, folks. I mean, I was just listening to the intro there and the whole idea of actually celebrating or being joyful about our trials and our suffering because we know what God's using that for, to make us be able to persevere, to give us hope, to give us what we need for what he knows is coming. We don't know what's coming, but he knows exactly what's coming. And so a lot of times he's got to put us through some tough times to prepare us for that. I can't even remember who I was. It might have just been I was watching a video the other day as I was scrolling through X. You know, I know I waste way too much time doing that, but it's become kind of like my news source. I follow all these people that when I say trust, believe me, it's trust but verify. I don't trust anybody completely anymore. But anyway, I'm scrolling through it, and this guy was talking about how it was actually a Catholic priest. I remember at least he had a collar on. Maybe he was some other Presbyterian or something, I don't know. But anyway, the guy was saying, I prayed for, whatever it was, and God gave me tough times instead because it prepared me for that thing that he was going to give me. In other words, God answers our prayers sometimes in ways that we don't want, but he knows that that's what we need. And I think as a nation, that's exactly what happened to us over the last 4 or 5 years. We want prosperity, we want freedom, we want liberty, we want good laws, we want good leaders, we pray for those things, and sometimes God has to give us tough times in order for us to be ready for the good times. Sometimes he has to give us the trial in order to make us learn and then appreciate the good times when they come. And boy, it sure feels like that right now. You know, the 4 years of the Biden administration, or I should say the Otto Penn administration, run by a bunch of unelected bureaucrats, was as bad as I've seen in my lifetime. I mean, way worse than even Barack Obama and even worse than Jimmy Carter. I didn't think it could get worse. I thought Jimmy Carter was the worst, and then I thought Barack Obama was the worst. But wow, the Otto Penn administration took it to a new level. And we saw this just Marxist agenda march across our nation. And we, you know, we lamented it and we talked about it, but we also worked to change it. We didn't just complain, and I don't even think what we did was could be labeled as complaining. I think what we did here on At the Core and Wall Builders, Patriot Academy, American Family Radio, all these entities, we brought attention to it, but we always did the good, the bad, and the ugly. We always said, okay, look, these policies are terrible. What these people are doing is wrong, and here's how you fix it. I think that's one thing that made us different. I think that's why our audiences grew, because people don't just want to hear people complain about things. They want to hear solutions. They want to know that there's an alternative to that. And one of the beauties of being biblical Christians is that you have the alternative. You have the answer book. You have not just a Christian ethos that's passed down by how you worship at church or how you gather or how you acknowledge God and how you pray. All those things, very important. But also an actual law book, an actual book of answers, an actual life plan, if you will. And God's Word gives you all of that if you're a not just a Christian, but a biblical Christian. And so I'm just kind of today wanting to stop for a second and celebrate the fact that that biblical application, leaders that were willing to say, there are things that work and things that don't work, and the way you know is, of course, practically looking in history and seeing what worked and what didn't work, but more importantly, looking into God's Word for the principles and for the truths by which you can govern your life. And biblical Christians stepped up over the last couple of years. I don't think they would have done that without the pain. I think we had to go through the suffering and the tough times to wake up enough pastors and Christians and churches and organizations and people to say, you know what, we got to stop hiding our light under a bushel. We got to stop, you know, just kind of having our little, you know, wonderful weekends together in our local church body, but not going out into the world and being salt and light. And so that pain of the worst administration maybe in history woke up a ton of people in the church to say, I'm not just going to be a professing Christian. I'm going to be a biblical Christian. I'm going to live this thing out according to God's law. I'm going to live my life that way. I'm going to raise my family that way. I'm going to look to God's law for how I run my business. I'm going to look to his book for how I vote and how I choose my leaders. And if I am a leader, if I'm a school board member or a legislator or a governor, I'm going to govern according to what he tells me works and doesn't work and what God's word clearly shows as the right path on those things. And because enough people did that, folks, every day is victory. I mean, we're watching Ten Commandments go back into schools. We're watching the Bible curriculum get out there. We're watching you know, people govern with integrity and with backbone. We're watching people that I criticized during COVID and during their tyrannical rule of COVID completely change and become you know, pro self-government and become champions of liberty. So it's just a beautiful, wonderful time to be alive and to celebrate the fact that we are now at that point where the suffering has produced so much of the hope and the perseverance and the, I forget which translation it is that says in that same chapter and verse in James, that he'll use that to make us, quote, perfect and complete, lacking nothing. And I mean, obviously, we're not going to become absolutely 100% perfect, but just like our preamble to our Constitution says, a more perfect union means we're constantly getting better. And it takes tough times sometimes to do that. So anyway, just more of the evidence of that. Let's hit a few of these headlines. And then when we come back from the break, I'll be glad to take some phone calls. But 888-589-8840 is the phone number. I know I should slow down when I say that. 888-589-8840. And you might have comments, questions, insults, whatever, about anything we've talked about over the last few weeks or any of the headlines that you see that I haven't mentioned on the program lately, or maybe even some of the things going on with Patriot Academy and Constitution City and the Military Veterans Leadership Congress that we've got going right now. In fact, I just ran down here to fire up the microphone just in time, coming straight from the legislative session that's happening right now in our House chamber at the Legislative Hall of Patriot Academy. And it's all these military veterans and Constitution coaches from across the country. And it's just, man, it's awesome. It's just so cool to see what they're doing. And we're going to take them out in the morning, do some flood relief, clean up and help with some of the folks as well. And then we'll do more debating tomorrow afternoon in the legislative hall, and we'll graduate them on Saturday, send them back home, many of them running for office, many of them grassroots leaders getting involved. So that's a hopeful, awesome, incredible fruit of the labor that has been put in the previous years, and glad to see that. But let's hit a couple of these headlines before we run out of time in this first segment. First one, I think the Donald Trump effect just continues. And you look at all these peace deals. We talked about this a little bit on Tuesday and last week, but these conflicts, some of which I didn't even know were occurring, that have been going on for years and years and years. Forgive me for not being a world scholar, but I mean, peace here, peace there, here a peace, there a peace deal, everywhere a peace deal. I mean, Donald Trump is the old McDonald of peace deals. It's happening all over the place. And of course, the creme de la creme, the absolute crown jewel of peace deals, for this moment in time anyway, would be a Russia-Ukraine peace deal. And this is the one Trump talked about the most on the campaign trail. This is the one he said he thought he could deliver on. I think Monday or Tuesday of this week, he set expectations low. You know, he said, I think we can make this happen. We might can make this happen. And, of course, some of those things are outside his control. And this is a conflict that, while this armed conflict that we have unfortunately been way too involved in, maybe more recent in years, this is a land and people with a whole lot of history that did not involve us. And conflict between them. And so there's some of this that's completely outside President Trump's control, but it's a very different day than when, you know, the auto pin in chief was in charge. Because, you know, when Joe Biden was in the White House, I mean, everybody knew that the adults were no longer in the room, so the kids could play and be crazy and hang from the chandeliers and run out into the streets and do whatever they want. And that's what happened all over the world as a result of the auto pin administration. Donald Trump, as soon as he's sworn in, things changed. Actually, as soon as the election was over and everybody knew he was about to be sworn in, things started changing. And we've seen that, of course, with all of these peace deals. Russia-Ukraine, look, Putin just said today, this is remarkable. I mean, he's actually going into the peace talks already saying that he's thankful that Trump is doing this peace push, are already saying that he thinks a U.S.-Russia nuclear arms deal could come out of this thing. I mean, I'm like, is he capitulating before he even gets there? Is he setting expectations already that some good things are going to come out of this? I actually thought, I mean, look, I am not a foreign policy expert. That's not my area of you know, most study. Most of what I say about foreign policy is based on what little bit I study it. That's not my area of expertise. I just want to say that up front. But I thought what was about to happen would be basically Trump's version of Ronald Reagan and Gorbachev at Reykjavik. I thought this would probably be a situation where Trump has to go in here, have the meeting, push for whatever he thinks is the right outcome, and then have to walk away from the table. Like I'm expecting there not to be a deal tomorrow. And that he'll have to, you know, do exactly what Ronald Reagan did at Reykjavik, where he, you know, basically pushed Gorbachev to the brink and then walked away and then came back and was able to get in the next meeting, virtually everything that he had been shooting for. I kind of think that's what Trump's going to have to do here. But then I look at this headline that came out today, and it looks like Putin is already saying, going into the meeting, that some of these things are possible, and I just didn't expect that. So that could mean that Trump's on this roll of peace deals, and it may continue through tomorrow. So I don't want to set, you know, expectations too high, but this guy, there's nothing like him, man. There's been no president in history as good at bringing people to the table and closing the deal. Not just having a picture opportunity, not just a photo opportunity, not just, you know, bragging about, I brought, you know, you remember Bill Clinton and I forget who, it was Rubin, I think, was the Israeli prime minister at the time, and Yasser Arafat, a terrorist. And I think that's who it was. And you know, Clinton sent it holding both hands and holding them up and, you know, basically proclaiming victory for a peace deal that, of course, didn't last because you can't make peace with terrorists. And so, you know, that's usually what happens, and frankly, with Republican presidents, too. It's not just a Democrat president, too. That's usually what happens is they're just going for the photo op. They want everybody to think that they're this great bringer together of people leader. Donald Trump just does it, man. I mean, he doesn't just talk about it. He does it, and he's gotten the results. It's just absolutely remarkable. The art of the deal is happening right before us, in this case, the deal between nations. So let's be thankful that he's the guy in the chair. Let's be thankful that he's the one in the room negotiating these things. He's proven himself to get results. Expectations, I still think, should be low, regardless of what Putin says going into this thing. But I think we should be praying. I think, you know, I was doing Flashpoint the other night, and Lance Wallnau was talking about that I'm sorry, not Lance, it was Dutch Sheets was talking about, you know, that we need to be covering this thing in prayer, and we need to be, you know, absolutely, you know, we know that God holds the king's heart in his hand. And so, you know, there's no telling what could come out of this. We obviously would prefer to have peace between Ukraine and Russia, where at least we're not spending our money anymore. I mean, Trump has made that clear. We're not giving cash to these folks. We're not. I don't think we're even giving weapons anymore. They're having to buy them. That's what should have happened from the beginning. But the auto pen in chief was writing blank checks to this poser Zelensky, who's just an absolute joke, which makes Trump's job here much more difficult to get a deal done. But it could happen. It could absolutely happen. So we got the right guy in the room negotiating it. Love to hear your thoughts on it. 888-589-8840. When we come back, I also want to talk a little bit today about self-government. What do we do to be better at self-governing not only ourselves, but our neighborhoods, our communities, and our states, and of course, our nation. Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, with you. We'll be back. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
Culture really doesn't like to line up with God's word. In our age of instant information and misinformation, where do you find the truth about the gender confusion being spread by the world?
The truth is ours to discover if we'll just open the Word of God and seek Him.
You can go from Ephesians 5 to Ephesians 6 in the instruction for fathers to instruct their children. There it's noteworthy that explicitly the fathers are given a role in instructing the children.
I think modern day women are taught, when we think of submission in terms of quiet, never saying anything and being an obedient robot, that's not what Scripture teaches. It doesn't mean a blind acquiescence.
In His Image is a life-changing documentary that answers those controversial questions from the only source for real truth, the Bible. See In His Image for the first time or watch it again, and invite your family and friends to watch as well. Visit resources.afa.net. Resources.afa.net.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
And we're back here on At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday, talking about President Trump and his incredible peace deals. I think I mentioned this Tuesday. You know, I don't care much about the titles and awards, and so the whole Nobel Prize thing is not, not a... I guess it's just lost its value in my mind. When you give it out to a guy like Barack Obama for doing nothing, you completely devalue it. And essentially, it's hard to recover from that sort of thing. So I don't really care whether or not the world recognizes him for the things that he's done. It's the results that matter. And it's kind of the American way. Like, you shouldn't care about the credit. You just want the results. You want people to leave you alone and let you do your job. And that's part of the whole self-governance thing that I think it's on the comeback. There's always been this diverging paths whenever someone is given freedom and the ability to choose what their world is going to look like. What is their neighborhood, their community, their state, or their nation going to look like? And when you have that choice, which is rare in the history of mankind, most people have had to live under tyranny where somebody else made all the decisions and had all the power. But when a people has been given the opportunity to make that choice, they have to choose between self-governance or, basically control of some, I'm trying to think of the fancy philosophical words, like Plato, called them his philosopher kings, or maybe that was Aristotle, get them all mixed up. Anyway, basically your elites. You're either going to be governed by elites that are supposedly smarter and better equipped to make decisions for you than you are equipped to make decisions for yourself, or you're going to be self-governed. And as a self-governing people, we have to be responsible. We have to, be able to take care of ourselves, to make good decisions, be willing to live with the consequences of our bad decisions, embrace the failure that we have in life so that we can learn from it and get better. I tell the Patriot Academy students all the time, I am really good at failure. And bring it on, fail quick, fail often. Somebody was just telling me yesterday, when you do that, you learn from, as long as you're learning from it, then you get to the point of success. And most business people, it's 6, 7, 8 failures before they have a success, or for every success, that's been about my average in both politics and business, is, several failures for every success, because you learn from those and get better. And that's part of self-governance. What we've tended to do the last 50, 60 years in America is shift from self-governing to elite governing because we didn't want to have to live with the consequences of our failure. We were so afraid of tough times and so afraid of the consequences of our decisions are the, you know, the negative side of freedom that we preferred to just go ahead and live in slavery. Just give it up to somebody else. Let somebody else be the decision maker. Make them live with the consequences, not realizing we're actually going to have to be the ones to live with the consequences. But at least I didn't make the decision. At least so I can blame somebody else. And we got into this blame game society. Instead of saying, I would prefer to decide, you know, what I'm going to do for a living. I would prefer to decide what time I'm going to get up in the morning, how hard I'm going to work. And then I have to live with the results of that, right? If I get lazy and I don't work hard and I, you know, if I spend my 20s in the basement of mom or grandma's house playing video games, I have to live with the consequence of that. I miss out on those 10 years of starting a family and having kids and making money to support them and all of those things. So that's just an example of kind of the self-governing dilemma that we've been in for the last 50 years. And giving all those decisions to the you know, elites came in the form of an expanded federal government, an expanded nanny state, an expanded health government. You know, this whole concept of public health is giving the decision making to the elites rather than self-governing. It should be private health. It isn't public health. It's private health. You are the one that should make the decisions about your body and the things that you eat and the things that the medical procedures that you're okay with or not okay with. So all of this sort of nanny state thing has bled over into even our land control and our you know, ability to have private property and make the decisions about what we do with our property. And I would make that a broad statement from the standpoint of the decisions about not only our literally the dirt, the land that we own and work and sweat for, but also our physical possessions. That's our property, our inventions and our creations, our speech, all of those things. That's our property. That's what we produce as an individual. And our ability to control that and benefit from that and decide how it's going to be used. If we're in a self-governing nation, then we get to choose how that's going to be done, and we have to live with the consequences or the benefits of how we chose to do that. In an elite governing situation, well, then we give all that decision-making power to someone else. And so when it comes to our business, for instance, we allow government to micromanage how our business is going to be run, how much we pay employees, how much our employees can work. When we decide to go to work for somebody, we have the government telling us how many hours is okay and how many hours is not okay and how much pay instead of us negotiating with them. We have the government telling us what we can drive and where we can park and, you know, all of these things. We basically hand it over to some unnamed bureaucrat to decide those things. And then even for our own home and our little piece of heaven, you know, wherever you live, I consider owning a piece of Texas, owning a piece of heaven. And, you know, we've allowed the self-governance of, okay, I'm going to have a driveway this long or this wide. I'm going to build a house this big or this small. I'm going to have this many bathrooms or, you know, my doors are going to be this wide. I'm going to have build a guest house for grandma or mother-in-law or my kids. What if I want to build three of those little guest houses so that my kids can live close by and while they're in their 20s, starting their families, we can have our own little family compound here and do life together and the grandkids can be right next door. It's what we had. And it is heaven to be able to do that. That's kind of nice if you get to make those decisions. That's called freedom. There's very few places in America left where you get to do that. Now it's you got to go ask permission of the city or the county or whoever. And they're going to tell you how many houses you can have on your property and how much water you can use. And they're going to tell you how wide your doors are going to be and how many bathrooms you can have and, you know, how much quote unquote impervious cover you can have on your property. And it becomes this micromanaging nightmare that absolutely kills the American dream. It really does. I mean, it's literally murder of the American dream. I've had enough of it. I am at a point where I've made this one of our top 12 priorities for restoring the nation. It's one of our 12 rebuilding steps, or what we call our 12-step recovery program. Our book, Rebuilding Liberty, the blueprint for rebuilding liberty, just in time for the 250th. I felt like, you know, the property rights thing had gone so far and we've gotten so far off track with regard to who gets to decide. Who decides where that driveway is going to go? Who decides how much how many of your family members are going to get to live on your property? It should be you, but unfortunately, we've moved into this thing where it's now the government and some micromanaging official that makes that decision. So we actually, what we're doing here at the Patriot Academy campus is we declared our independence back on July 4th, and I wrote a modified Declaration of Independence to point some of these things out, and we're creating our own city. We're literally building a city. City on a hill, if you will. Might have to do a statue of John Winthrop. But it's Constitution City. That's the name of it. I think that's appropriate since our focus is teaching the Constitution. And people are going to be able to come from all over and come to our city, Constitution City, Texas, just outside of San Antonio, between Fredericksburg and San Antonio, and study the Constitution in Constitution City, in Independence Hall in Constitution City, Texas. And I think it's sort of throwing the gauntlet down and saying self-government is better than government by bureaucrats. Self-governance allows us to dictate our future and live with the consequences of that. And we're going to do it in a very small way. I like things to be a little bit poetic, and I love nodding to history. I love nodding to those who came before us, giving them a nod, kind of sort of a hat tip to the greats that we stand on the shoulders of. And so our acreage here at Constitution City is 177.6 acres. 177.6. How about that for poetic, huh? 1776. And so it's small. Look, we're going to be a small city, but it's going to be the newest city in Texas, and it's going to be the place where constitutional principles are revived. So I just want to read to you a couple of these lines out of our Declaration of Independence. And I see those phone calls, folks. Sorry, I said I'd get to them in the second segment. If you hang on, I'll get to you as quick as I can. I do want to share a couple of these principles out of our Declaration because I think it's kind of cool. I think it definitely is a nod to the ones that came before us, but making it a little bit more applicable to exactly what we're facing today. So this is Constitution City, Texas, and it's a little bit different than the original Constitution. Declaration of Independence. It's not a lot different, but it's a little bit more applicable to what we're doing here. Okay, so the Declaration of Independence actually says at the top, it says in Congress, July 4, 1776. So ours says at Patriot Academy, July 4th, 2025, because we declared our independence 4 weeks ago on July 4th. And ours says the unanimous declaration of the inhabitants of the Patriot Academy campus. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to establish laws modifying the political bands which have connected them with another. So that's what we're doing. We're establishing laws through a new city that is modifying our political bands with the people that we're connected to. And I added, everybody knows this part of the original Declaration. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, including private property ownership, a fundamental tenet of freedom. And then, of course, the Declaration says that that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that when any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such forms as shall to them seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. So that's what we're doing. We're implementing a new form of government. We're not getting rid of our state or our county or any of that. They're all still there. We're still subject to them. We're still living in the same county. We're still living in the same state. We still have to follow all those state laws and county laws. But as a city, we get to take some of that decision-making power and govern ourselves. Some of that decision-making power that had been given over to local government, where you're letting people that don't even live on this land tell you what to do with your land. They live miles and miles away, and yet they get to tell us what to do. So we're taking that power back and being able to decide that ourselves. So actually, modified declaration says, the history of the present King of Britain, or the King of Great Britain, is a history of repeated injuries and usurpation. So I modified that to say the history of the present would-be kings, some elected and many unelected, is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of a, and I added this, micromanaging, death by a thousand cuts, tyranny over property owned, not by these would-be kings, but by the property owners who rightfully paid for their property with their time, toil, and treasure. And all of that, I really wanted to get to this line because I was talking about how, you know, when you get to the point where you can't even live out the American dream, that you got a real problem. And so in the Declaration of Independence, there's 27 grievances that the Founding Fathers listed that the King of Great Britain had caused them to want to separate for. And one of those, he said, let's see if I can find it here. Here we go. The Declaration of Independence, the original, says he has excited domestic insurrections amongst us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all. Ages, sexes, and conditions. Okay, so I modified that, and here's what the modification says. They have excited domestic unrest amongst us by stoking fear between neighbors and have endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless worshipers of the creation rather than the creator, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all property owner rights in favor of the unelected regulatory bureaucrat with endless measures of control. Now, come on, folks. That's pretty poetic. You got to like that. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. And then the last one I was going to read to you. Let's see if I can find it here. At the very end, we therefore, the inhabitants of the 177.6-acre Patriot Academy campus assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these lands, solemnly publish and declare that these lands are and of right ought to be free and an independent city operating under the laws of the great state of Texas. It just goes on and on and on. It's good stuff. All right, folks, if you want to follow that, make sure you're following me on Facebook. You can find me there under Patriot Rick Green. And, of course, always listening to At the Core for updates. But here's why we're doing this. First of all, so that we have the coolest address on the planet, 1776 Patriot Way. That's right, 1776 Patriot Way, Constitution City, Texas. And then secondly, so that as we're teaching civics here to students and doing all the things we do with Patriot Academy, that we can experience civics. So these young people will be able to help run a city. They'll be part of self-governing. And then that's the real crux right there, reestablishing self-governance and the proper balance between individual and group governance, individual and neighborly governance, making sure that the answer to the question who decides is properly assigned. And sometimes government should decide. Sometimes your local government should make a decision. Sometimes it should be state government. Sometimes it should be the federal government, the president. Sometimes it should be the courts. Sometimes it should be Congress. But most of the time, it should be you. Most of the time, the answer to the question who decides ought to be you. And so we're just shifting some of that decision-making power back to the individual, back to the landowner in this case, and back to the local city instead of the broader context of a county or the state. And that's the way it's always worked. That's why cities are formed. Communities come together and say, we want to govern ourselves. We want to have more of that self-governing happen here. All right, I promise I will get to the phone calls. When we come back, we've got a lot of you in queue, and I apologize for making you wait. 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. And probably Mark from Kentucky will be up first when we come back. So, Mark, hang in there. We'll be right back. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me. Phone number is 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. Let's go to Mark in Kentucky. Mark, you're up first, man. What's your comment, question, or insult today?
Oh, yeah. Senior Chief Green. Great to talk to you again, sir.
Yes, sir.
So the senior chief on, say, a submarine, which I served, was had the privilege of serving on during the Reagan era. The most senior enlisted man probably knows most of all. The only thing he doesn't know is exactly where we're going, but can pretty much run the ship. And you, sir, are such a great example of a man that, I mean, my goodness, you served in elected positions there in the state of Texas. You're doing this at Patriot Academy. You got on all these different shows. You're just a great, I'm not puffing you up. You're just an amazing example. And so is the man, the real man in the White House. The thing that I wanted to call on, it's very difficult to articulate this in a simple form. But these amazing things, God gave us back the playing field. A real man in charge that in and of itself is an amazing thing to watch, a billionaire get his attention gotten by the Almighty. Oh, yeah, that thing would have taken out my cranium had I turned it a little bit more, right? And so he's a work in process. He's not raised up in church kind of Christian guy, right?
And aren't we all, though, right, Mark? We're all a work in progress, just saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'll slow down here a little bit. But my point is like, what is this propensity of full of faith, call it, that like they like to hear, but they get to a point where, and I really hesitate to do this. You brought it up already, but you're on another show. I used to watch that show regularly. It's gotten diluted down. Let's all sit around and chew the fat instead of talking about the news. There's so much news every day. And they increased that show to 4 days a week. But frankly, it's kind of boring. I mean, there's the antics. That's fun. But let's get on nitty gritty, the dark and dirty. What's really going on? Where's Trump? And what is our role to support the bringing back of freedom in America, one nation under God?
Well, what I would recommend, Mark, big time, is for you to sign up to take our Rebuilding Liberty course, because I give you 12 specific roles, 12 specific things you can do in your community. You don't have to do all 12, but you got to pick at least one or two. So there'll be no excuse of not knowing what is our role to make a difference. I give you some easy ones in there and some hard ones, and some of them are going to take years to do, but some of them you can do in 15 minutes. So my recommendation is go to patriotacademy.com, sign up as a host or a coach today, and get that Rebuilding Liberty course that we just released. It's 4 weeks long. It's 45 minutes of roughly 45 to 55 minutes of video each week, and then tons of action steps. And we're still rolling out. We got the workbook and all that, and the blueprint book coming in the next few weeks. The big launch on that is going to be Constitution Day next month, September 17th. So we're still a few weeks away from launching it, but you sound like you're chomping at the bit to be a part of it. So I would love for you to become one of our coaches and do that. If you don't think we're talking about enough specifics on, I think I know which show you're talking about. I do 5 different shows a week. So just so you know, I think I know what you're talking about. But I think we still give a lot of meat on all the shows that we're doing. But if it's not enough for you, man, go take Rebuilding Liberty. Highly recommend it. All right, let's go to, that was Kentucky. Let's go to Arkansas. Alan in Arkansas is up next. Alan, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go for it, man.
Quick way to end the war over in Ukraine.
What's that?
Putin and Zelensky having a duel at the border.
You know what? Hey, here's what would happen. Here's my prediction if they did that. Zelensky would try some goofy ballerina move, and Putin would probably end it in about 2 seconds if his presentation is fast enough. You got a warrior versus a comedian actor, and it would be over too quick, actually. But yes, it would be interesting if duels were brought back. You know, I was surprised to find out. You know, everybody knows about Alexander Hamilton and Burr's, you know, duel back in whatever year that was, 1790, whatever it was. Everybody knows about that one. The one that most people don't know about, that we found out about, and I did a show about it years ago, 10 years ago, was a signer of the Declaration from Georgia named Button Gwinnett. And he had a duel with this guy that was governor of Georgia, and it was all over this military expedition where they were trying to rescue the 3 signers of the Declaration from South Carolina that were being held in the northwest corner of Florida by the British, and it was a debacle. And one of them, I can't remember which one, called the other one a scoundrel, but that was enough for them to have a duel. And the signer of the Declaration died as a result. They both mashed the trigger, which in firearms training, that means you're you're pressing the trigger too hard and it's causing your barrel to, think about it, if you're right-handed, if you can picture this, I know you're listening on radio, but if you're right-handed and you press the trigger too hard and you what we call mash the trigger, then what happens is, just imagine the barrel of your gun now going down and to the left of where it should be. So if you're on target, if you're pointed right in to center mass, or what we would call the thoracic cavity, if you're pointed in and you mash the trigger, now all of a sudden your barrel's going down and to the left. And both of these guys must have done that because both of them were shot in the leg in the duel, and apparently Gwinnett got infected and died. Now, why am I telling you that story? I don't know. I guess because duels were mentioned by the caller, and it brought to mind this signer of the Declaration dying within a year of the signing of the Declaration, which takes me back to, I think it was not Mark, but, I forgot who that first caller was, his comment about we're all a work in progress. We are. We're all a work in progress, including the Founding Fathers. So all these people that think the Founding Fathers were some kind of saints, you know, and they say, oh, we can't do an amendment to the Constitution. There's no Adams. There's no Washington. There's no Madison. We don't have anybody like that today. They were not saints. They were sinners just like you and me. They were flawed men that God used in a mighty way. Now, were they educated? Absolutely, man. Some of those brilliant in history. They were well-read. We have a lot of good people like that today. Not everybody. And there'll be some people at the convention that to amend the Constitution that are not, you know, good people and not brilliant people. That's what happens when you live in freedom. Yeah, that's what, now I would be for a rictatorship. If everybody out there was okay with a rictatorship and I could be the dictator and write the laws, it'd be great for a little while, but believe me, that evil in my heart would come out too, just like Jeremiah 17:9 says. So anyway, all that to say, the founders were flawed men and God used them to produce this incredible nation. And I believe there are good people in our nation today that could win the day at a convention of states and get some good amendments to the Constitution to restore what those founding fathers put in place. All right. Don't know why I got off on that, but let's go to Tommy in Ohio. Tommy, you're up next, man. Go ahead. And by the way, the phone number out there, 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. Tommy, you're up. Can you hear me? Might have lost Tommy. Oh, nope, there he is. Tommy, you getting off mute there? Okay, I guess not. Can't hear you. Thanks for trying. 888-589-8840. I've heard this a lot, this whole excuse of, oh, we can't do a convention of states because, you know, I don't trust the people in the state legislature. Well, neither do I. I don't trust any politician. And it's like my friend Bob McEwen says, never trust any politician any further than you can throw them over your shoulder left-handed. So it's not just how far you can throw them. It's how far you can throw them over your shoulder left-handed. That's Bob McEwen. Love him. Anyway, I don't trust them. What I trust is the process and the ability for us to come together and give the people a chance to self-govern. And a convention of states is self-governance. It's the people closer to us, our state legislators, not our congressmen and not the president and not the Supreme Court. It's the people closest to us being the ones that can make the final decision on how our government's going to look and what the guardrails are going to be on who gets to decide. Everything I was talking about in the last segment, who decides? And according to the Constitution, the answer to who decides is usually we the people or the states. And sometimes, rarely, in fact, in only 17 specific areas of power is the answer to the question, who decides? The federal government. And who should declare war? The federal government. Who should set up post offices and post roads? The federal government. Who should set up our system for protecting your invention or your creation? Patents, copyrights, trademarks. The federal government. All of those types of things are listed in the Constitution in Article 1, Section 8 as part of those 17 enumerated powers for the federal government. Everything else. And the 10th Amendment is just a rubber, you know, a reminder, an exclamation point, a stamp on the idea that if it's not listed in here, if it's not in the Constitution, that was originally understood with the original Constitution, but even in the Bill of Rights, they said, you know what, let's just remind everybody with the 10th Amendment that anything not listed in the Constitution is left to the states and the people. And restoring that requires the states and the people to come together and do new constitutional amendments. Once again, just like with the Bill of Rights, had to remind everybody with the 10th Amendment, and that was only a couple of years in. We've only been around a couple of years, and they said, you know, we need to remind everybody that if it's not listed here, they don't get to do it. Well, my goodness, folks, it's been 200 years. We need to remind everybody, if it's not listed in here, you don't get to do it at the federal level. If it's not in the Constitution, it goes back to the states and the people. That's why we need a convention of states, for the very same reason we did the Bill of Rights. Remind everybody, here's what the feds get to do, here's what they don't get to do. We need to do that again. And we're about 200 years overdue for doing that again. So that's why I support a convention of states. Conventionofstates.com, by the way, if you want to learn more about that and get signed up there in your local community to help make that happen. Absolutely needs to happen. All right, I get off on these subjects. I rant a little bit. Let's go to Jeremiah in Mississippi. Jeremiah, go ahead, man. You are up next on At the Core with Walker Wildman, yes, and Rick Green. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
I got a question about as far as freedom goes. How is it that if you pay your land taxes, you get evicted? I mean, where does land taxes fall in there somewhere that you is something that must be paid? And how is that not considered not free, I guess I would say?
Yeah, man. No, brother, you're asking a very important question, Jeremiah. That's why I've said for 30 years, you don't own your property. You rent it from the government. You are a serf on feudal land. And if you don't believe me, try not paying those property taxes. Try not paying those land taxes. And actually, I think your language is good. I think saying land tax is a great way to remind people property taxes are punishing you for owning your own piece of land. And I've been against it from day one. I tried to abolish land taxes, property taxes, here in Texas back when I was a legislator. And now Governor DeSantis is trying to do it in Florida and setting an example for it. And now there are some legislators in Texas and some think tanks and even the governor and lieutenant governor say that they want to get rid of property taxes now. Back when I was pushing for it 25 years ago, oh, my goodness, it was like people would look at me like I had three heads. But it absolutely can be done. It absolutely should be done. You should not have to rent your property from government. The only fair moral tax is a transaction tax, a sales tax. You should only have to pay money to the government when you spend your money, not just for owning a piece of land, not just for making money. Income tax is wrong. Government should not be able to take out part of your income before you even get it, or punish you later and make you give back or give to, not give back. They didn't earn it. Give to government part of your income. That's immoral as well. Paying property taxes and income taxes is, in my opinion, absolutely immoral and the worst way to tax, because it punishes progress. It punishes investment. It punishes, improving your land. You got to pay more to the government because you put a little porch on your house and they raise the value of the property, let alone raise the rate. So the only proper way to tax in a fair and moral way is a transaction tax. And that means when you go buy groceries or you go buy land or you go buy clothes or you go buy a car, or you go buy whatever you buy, when you buy it, you can make an informed decision that I'm going to pay for this item and then I'm also going to pay for my taxes as I buy this item. And so I may not be ready to buy that car, or I may not be able to buy as much of a car because I'm going to have to pay whatever it is, 6, 8, 10% sales tax on that item. But at least once I pay that, I'm done. I don't get punished for owning that car and get taxed every year for it. I don't get punished for owning that land or that house and get taxed every year for it. I pay one time. And if it's your house, you pay one time and you roll it into your mortgage. And once you pay off that mortgage, you're done. It's yours from then on, as it should be. You can pass it down to your kids and it's theirs from then on, as it should be. So, yeah, that's a big one, brother. I'm glad you raised that. I don't know if we can get this in before we go. But, Brian, in Georgia, let's try it, man. Ask real quick and I'll try to answer real quick.
It's real quick. I appreciate your show.
You bet.
My question is, if you have already found, you've been on your property 18 years, and then one of your relatives came by and said, man, there's a graveyard on your property. And I found that is a graveyard on my property. Three bodies are in it.
Wow.
But they said, you cannot be tax exempt on this. And that's a story. I need to find out where the law is.
I don't know the answer to that specific scenario, but I would argue that if the government is telling you you can't use that part of your property and they're not willing to exhume those bodies and move them somewhere else, or not allowing you to exhume those bodies and move them to a graveyard and saying now you've got this half acre area or whatever that you can't use, you certainly should not have to pay property taxes on it. And somebody ought to have to buy it from you, is it would be my view on that. It's the same with a, you know, an endangered species or whatever. It's crazy when government comes to you and says you can no longer use this piece of your property because there's some maggot or beetle or warbler or rat, and now you just have to hold on to your property and everybody else gets to enjoy it, but not you. That's insane. All right, got to go. Out of time, folks. Thanks so much for listening. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.